Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Okay, so this next section. In mindfulness, the gatekeeper, it's actually the last section, mindfulness, jhana, and release. The path does not end with the practice of jhana. Instead, it uses jhana to provide the trio of right mindfulness, right effort, and right view, with a foundation for developing all the path factors to an even more refined degree so as to lead to total release. So that, of course, that right mindfulness, right effort, and right view are the basis of the Mahajatari, the Mahajatari Sakka Sutta, the Great 40, from the Majjhima Nikaya. And that the Eightfold Path being developed with those three revolving through all of the other path factors. Jhana can provide this foundation because the act of mastering strong concentration changes many of the basic dynamics within the mind. As you find more and more that a solid happiness can be found by subduing all greed and distress with reference to the world, your search for happiness focuses less on the world and more exclusively on maintaining mindful concentration at all times. Your desire to produce and consume happiness becomes more focused right here. And because the mind in concentration is so clear and bright, right view can watch this desire and its results more clearly as they occur. In this way, concentration provides an excellent basis for exposing the processes of fabrication, sankhara, the constructs of the mind, the intentional processes by which the mind shapes experience, as they occur within the levels of concentration itself. When you finally come to realize the limitations even of concentration, right view together with right mindfulness and right effort develop dispassion for the process of fabricating it. Because fabrication depends on passion and desire, this dispassion puts an end to all fabrication, and with that the mind is released. Any questions? I think that's a really important basis of the whole of Buddhist practice, really, that a recognition of the happiness that arises from mindfulness and concentration, subduing that greed and distress with reference to the world, which is part of the classic formula of mindfulness, is in your basis because I think this was one of the things that just the use of the English language when you say. Say like the word renunciation, it feels so painful that you have to give up something, but the reality is what you're giving up is suffering and inclining and allowing the mind, the heart to experience well-being and happiness, and that goes similarly, even with the one starts to see, say, like the, it's one of the reasons why, say, the mind say becomes more refined in concentration. They like say one is willing to relinquish, like in first jhana, the mind is willing to relinquish vitakka vichara because one sees it as more coarse and inclines to the dwelling in and delighting in just the pitti sukha without the complication of thinking about it.
And then is it easy for that person to, that has attained this, is it easy for that person to deal with the world and then come back in?
If they're actually developing mindfulness and wisdom, there's any number of space cadets that shut the world out, but that's not the not the point of it.
I was just wondering how those people do if they're able to go in and out of the world easily.
Well, it's a skill, and it's part of the cultivation of wisdom, because it's also suffering to push away something. That to push away the world is also reifying it. You know, in that sense of one gives it power when one is afraid of it. So the variety of teachers that I've seen who have been accomplished, and somebody like Ajahn Chah, that's actually how you become effective in the world. You know, it's when you're not carrying the world around, or not approaching the world from a self-centered or egotistical or self-oriented a basis. It's not quite like the great American philosopher Donald Trump, who said that show me somebody without ego, and I'll show you a loser. It's when there's a real understanding through mindfulness, awareness, right view, a steadiness of mind, and there's an ability to set those agendas of self aside, because they clutter our engagement with the world.
That's in my experience, like lay people I know who have a highly developed meditation practice, they seem to function incredibly well in the world.
Oh yeah.
Based on that practice, and
yeah,
it's like and they seem to have a sense of more energy.
Oh yeah, I know quite a few lay people who are accomplished practitioners and extremely. It astounds me sometimes what they're able to accomplish and keep up a steady practice. It's pretty amazing.
Just as you were saying, then also on the flip side, if someone's really spaced out, it, that seems to me that there's a nicha aspect then to the concentration.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's self-centered.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a manifestation. That kind of... that kind of... spaced out aspect of it is a kind of self-obsession. Okay. He illustrates this point with a quote from the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Majjhima 140. And that's a teaching that the Buddha gave to the wanderer Pukkhasati. And that's a very long sutta. This is just a short snippet of it. and the Buddha speaking of, say, in the fourth jhana. The sutta doesn't start here. There's a long preamble and a development of the perspectives of practice. In the fourth jhana, there remains only equanimity, pure and bright, pliant, malleable, and luminous. Just as if a dexterous goldsmith or a goldsmith's apprentice were to prepare a furnace, heat up a crucible, and, taking gold with a pair of tongs, place it in the crucible. He would blow on it time and again, sprinkle water on it time and again, examine it time and again, so that the gold would become refined, well refined, thoroughly refined, flawless, free from dross, pliant, malleable, and luminous. Then whatever sort of ornament he had in mind, whether a belt, an earring, a necklace, or a gold chain, it would serve his purpose. In the same way, there remains only equanimity, pure and bright, pliant, malleable, and luminous. One discerns that, quote, if I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright as this toward the dimension of the infinitude of space, I would develop the mind along those lines. And thus this equanimity of mind, thus supported, thus sustained, would last for a long time. One discerns that, if I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright as this toward the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness, the dimension of nothingness, the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, I would develop, and those are the immaterial attainments, I would develop the mind along those lines, and thus this equanimity of mind, thus supported, thus sustained, would last for a long time. One discerns that, if I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright as this towards the dimension of the infinitude of space, and to develop the mind along those lines, that would be fabricated. One discerns that, if I were to direct equanimity as pure and bright as this toward the dimension of the infinitude of consciousness, the dimension of nothingness, and the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, and to develop the mind along those lines, that would be fabricated. One neither fabricates nor mentally fashions for the sake of becoming or unbecoming or non-becoming. This being the case, one doesn't cling to anything in the world. Not clinging, one is not agitated. Unagitated, one is totally unbound right within. One discerns that birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done. There is nothing further for this world. Right mindfulness plays a consistent role in this process, not only giving rise to concentration and maintaining it, but also reminding you of the framework, motivation, and duties of right view. To examine the results of your concentration for any traces of stress or suffering or dukkha, and when finding them, to abandon their causes through the subtlest level of right effort. In this way, even after they have directed all the other factors of the path to right concentration, the trio of right view, right mindfulness, and right effort continue to work in harmony to bring about total release. Even after attaining total release, arahants continue practicing the four establishings of mindfulness. However, having completed the path, their motivation for practicing right mindfulness has now changed. Because they have nothing more to add to their attainment and are now totally disjoined from the objects on which mindfulness is based, their fully developed mindfulness finds these four establishings a natural place to settle. And he illustrates that with Sanyutta 47, Sutta number 4. Even those who are arahants, whose effluence are asavas, whose asavas are ended, who have reached fulfillment, done the task, laid down the burden, attained the true goal, totally destroyed the fetter of becoming, and who are released through right knowledge, even they remain focused on the body in and of itself, being ardent, alert, unified, clear-minded, concentrated, and single-minded, disjoined from the body. They remain focused on feelings in and of themselves, on the mind in and of itself, on mental qualities in and of themselves, being ardent, alert, unified, clear-minded, concentrated, and single-minded, disjoined from mental qualities. And I think that's a... I want to read the whole sutta, but I don't really like that word, disjoined, because it gives the... it gives that impression of completely... just technically correct, but the image is one of having not having a connection or not having any kind of knowledge, a sort of disjoined, a sort of completely spaced out. But that is something that is not. It's sort of like there's a ability to say, maybe not entangled is a better word. Say not entangled with the body, not entangled with feelings, not entangled with the mind, not entangled with the mental qualities. Well, we'll see what Bhikkhu Bodhi has to say. The whole sutta. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Kosalans at the Brahmin village of Sala. There the Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus thus. Bhikkhus, those bhikkhus who are newly ordained, not long gone forth, recently come to this Dhamma and discipline, should be exhorted, settled, and established by you in the development of the four establishments of mindfulness. What for? Come, friends, dwell contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehended, clearly comprehending, unified, with limpid mind, concentrated, with one-pointed mind, in order to know the body as it really is. Dwell contemplating feelings and feelings, in order to know feelings as they really are. Dwell contemplating mind and mind, in order to know mind as it really is. Dwell contemplating phenomena, in order to know phenomena as they really are. Bhikkhus, those bhikkhus who are trainees, who have not attained their mind's ideal, who dwell aspiring for the unsurpassed security from bondage, they too, that would be sekha, so that would be... say somebody who is, say when they say newly ordained, would be somebody who has really just begun the training. Trainees, sekha, so that's somebody who has realized at least stream entry stream entry, once returner, non-returner. Those bhikkhus who are trainees, who have not attained their mind's ideal, who dwell aspiring for the unsurpassed security from bondage, they too dwell contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, unified, with limpid mind, concentrated, with one-pointed mind, in order to fully understand the body as it really is. They too dwell contemplating feelings in feelings, in order to fully understand feelings as they really are. They too dwell contemplating mind in mind, in order to fully understand mind as it really is. They too dwell contemplating phenomena in phenomena, in order to fully understand phenomena as they really are. Bhikkhus, those bhikkhus who are arhants, whose taints are destroyed, who have lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached their own goal, utterly destroyed the fetters of existence, and are completely liberated through final knowledge, they too dwell contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, unified, with limpid mind, concentrated, with one-pointed mind, detached from the body. They too dwell contemplating feelings in feelings, detached from feelings. They too dwell contemplating mind in mind, detached from mind. They too dwell contemplating phenomena in phenomena, detached from phenomena. Bhikkhus, those bhikkhus who are newly ordained, not long gone forth, recently come to this Dhamma and discipline, should be exhorted, settled, and established by you in the development of these four establishments of mindfulness. That's a Bhikkhu Bodhi translating it as detached, which is probably a bit better than disjoined. Well, let's see. Here we go. It's easy to find. It all exists. Sunyutta 47. No, it's not. It isn't translated in the or it isn't in the Access to Insight. Yeah, I mean, it's like it's in Access to Insight. You've got the whatever he's translated into English, the Pali is also accessible, but it's not there.
Is the website, is that online or?
Oh, which Access to Insight?
Or your device there? Because SuttaCentral.net would certainly have.
So I'm not online. I'll leave it for each person's homework to look it up. Okay. Sutta 54, Sutta number 11, makes an even stronger claim for the concentration of mindfulness of breathing, which Machima 118 equates with right mindfulness. 118 is Gayakata Sati Sutta, I think. Or mindfulness. Anapanasati Sutta. Not only do arahants practice it, even the Buddha used it as one of his favorite meditative dwellings. So this is a quote from the sutta. Then the Blessed One, having emerged from seclusion after the passing of 3 months, addressed the monks. Monks, if wanderers of other sects ask you, by means of what dwelling friends did Gotama the contemplative mostly dwell during the rain's residence? You, thus asked, should answer them in this way. It was by means of the concentration of mindfulness of breathing that the Blessed One mostly dwelled. For whatever one, rightly speaking, would call a noble dwelling, a Brahma dwelling, a Tathagata dwelling, It would be the concentration of mindfulness of breathing that he, speaking rightly, would call a noble dwelling, a Brahma dwelling, a Tathagata dwelling. Those who are learners, who have yet to attain their heart's desire, who stay resolved on the unexcelled security from bondage, when the concentration of mindfulness of breathing is developed and pursued by them, it leads to the ending of the asavas. Those who are arahants, whose asavas are ended, who have reached fulfillment, done the task, laid down the burden, attained the true goal, totally destroyed the fetter of becoming, and who are released through right knowledge, when the concentration of mindfulness of breathing is developed and pursued by them, it leads to a pleasant abiding here and now, and to mindfulness and alertness. This means that right mindfulness functions not only as a factor of the path, but also as a pleasant pastime for those who have fully developed the path and tasted its ultimate fruit. And there's a quote from Diga 19. Panchasika, the Gandhaba, the celestial musician. Just as the water of the Ganges runs together and harmonizes with the water of the Yamuna, in the same way the path of practice leading to Nibbana, well promulgated by that Blessed One for his disciples, they run together, Nibbana and the path of practice. This doesn't mean that right mindfulness is identical with Nibbana. After all, as Ittivuttika 90 points out, right mindfulness is fabricated, whereas the realization of Nibbana is not. Simply that the practice of right mindfulness is compatible with a mind that through the realization of Nibbana is totally unfettered by defilement and free. And I thought I would read that. Ittivuttika 90. This was said by the Blessed One. Because there are these three foremost kinds of faith. What are the three? Whatever beings there are, whether footless or two-footed or four-footed, with form or without form, percipient or non-percipient, or neither percipient nor non-percipient, of these the Tathagata is reckoned foremost, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one. Those who have faith in the Buddha have faith in the foremost, and for those with faith in the foremost, the result will be foremost. Whatever states there are, whether conditioned or unconditioned, of these detachment or non-clinging is reckoned foremost, that is, the subduing of vanity, the elimination of thirst, the removal of reliance, the termination of the round of rebirths, the destruction of craving, detachment, cessation, Nibbana. Those who have faith in the Dhamma of detachment or dispassion have, I'm pretty sure that's viraka, dispassion, have faith in the foremost. And for those with faith in the foremost, the result will be foremost. Whatever communities or groups there are, bhikkhus, of these the Sangha of the Tathagata's disciples is reckoned foremost. That is, the four pairs of persons, the eight individuals, this Sangha of the Lord's disciples is worthy of gifts. So it's all, when you see the, when it's speaking of the four pairs of persons, eight individuals, this is speaking of those who have realized their stream entry, once return or non-return or arahantship. it's not talking about a conventional sangha, it's talking about the Arya Sangha. This Sangha of the Lord's disciples is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, the unsurpassable field of merit for the world. Those who have faith in the Sangha have faith in the foremost, and for those with faith in the foremost, the result will be foremost. These bhikkhus are the three foremost kinds of faith. And then it ends with a verse. This is foremost for those with faith, for those who know the foremost Dhamma, having faith in the Buddha as foremost, worthy of offerings unsurpassed. Having faith in the Dhamma as foremost, the peace of detachment, bliss. Having faith in the Sangha as foremost, a field of merit unsurpassed. Distributing gifts among the foremost, foremost is the merit that accrues. Foremost their life and beauty, fame, reputation, happiness, and strength. The wise one who gives to the foremost, concentrated on the foremost Dhamma, whether they become a deva or a human, rejoices in foremost attainment. That's actually the chant, Agata Vepasan Nang Agang Dhammam Vijanatang. We do that as one of the blessing chants after the meal. It finally finishes the first chapter. Okay?